Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me. Good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, speaking to you from our studio here in Washington, D.C., along with my co-host.
Greetings to our audience, and Brother Bilal, assalamu alaikum to you, and I'm glad how you doing, my brother.
Everything's going pretty good, Brother Aziz, alaikum salam. How are you doing?
Good, Brother Alhamdulillah, doing well, and glad for us having another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association Blog Talk Radio Show.
Well, I guess
glad
I'm just
to be on it, brother.
I guess I'm just as glad as you are, and we are glad to have all of our hosts and our audience. So, again, we both greet you, all of our audience, with a very good evening. And our brother Aziz, we will take a sponsor break and come back, giving everybody a chance to come on. And we'll be right back after a sponsor break.
Natural Skincare by Karima with Shea Butter. We offer a great selection of 100% all-natural moisturizing creams for the face and body, without preservatives. Also, check out our hair products. Order online and get them delivered to your home. Check out our new online shop at www.etsy.com. Search for Natural Skincare by KHB. For more information, visit us online at www.naturalskincarebykarima.com or email us at naturalskincarebykarima@gmail.com. Give us a call at 301-534-4475 or fax us at 240-318-3537. Try out our newest product, our peppermint foot rub, for a luxurious feeling your feet won't forget. Bynum & Associates Financial Planning and Insurance. Immediate annuities. Retirees, roll over your 401ks, TSPs, and pension plans into an immediate annuity. It will pay you a monthly income for life guaranteed. Please contact me for a free income quote today. At Bynum & Associates, we'll professionally mind your business. Visit us online at www.BynumAssociatesInsurance.com or give us a call at 202-288-5660 or 301-234-9090.
And welcome back to the studio. Again, my name is Bilal Masadiq Bynum, and my co-host, Bilal, Brother Aziz
Abdul Aziz Shaheed.
Yeah, introduce yourself, brother. I'm talking a little fast this evening. And,
no problem, brother.
No problem. Thank you. Again, yeah. And we're going to be welcoming all of our audience as they come on. Tonight we're going to have an open mic, which means we don't have any particular subject other than at 8 o'clock we will have our natural disaster program, but from 7 until 8 we will be doing network marketing and business identification. So this is a wonderful time for you to come on the air and introduce your business to us all. And a good time for all of us to listen, because who knows, by networking and introducing your business, you just may find a clientele in this discussion. And that's what it's all about, identifying businesses, and hopefully we can do business with each other. So open mic is tonight, network marketing and business identification. I like to start off by saying that most of you got a picture that I sent out, and that was the meeting that was held by the Ukraine president that was held in New York at the United Nations. And, of course, we were looking forward to going, but we received the information with just about a 24-hour notice, so it didn't give us time enough to to prepare to go. But I've been informed that they are going to be inviting us to come to their embassy here in Washington, D.C., to still have a business meeting, and that business meeting will still be pertaining to marketing with each other, buying and selling each other's goods and services. And again, this is the country of Ukraine.
And, not Kazakhstan.
I'm sorry, not Ukraine. No, thank you, Brother Ozzy.
Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan. I have to put that K-A sound in there. Kazakhstan. There we go.
That is.
If I get that K-A, that K-A sound, and I can get it in. So Kazakhstan.
K-A-H,
the H is, I just leave that silent just like it is. But, Kazakhstan, we look forward to visiting that embassy and having a meeting, and hopefully that meeting will be quite productive. Brothers and sisters, with what's going on here in the United States and the history of what we as African Americans have gone through ever since we've been here, we need outside sources to market our goods and services, because for some reason this country, as much as we have helped to build this democracy, I mean, through every whatever battles we had to go through, whatever sacrifice that had to be made, the African Americans, in many cases, was the first to stand up for this democracy and what we call the land of freedom, and having the freedom that we have today. But the ugly face of racism has never given us the partnership that we expected to have. So having a place where we can actually have a fair shot at getting back what we have earned, we need that outlet, because it just, I don't know, I hate to say it, but after 500 years, look like it just can't happen for us in this country. But, of course, this is our home, so we have to continue to try, but at the same time, it makes sense for us to look for a place where we can have opportunities that can give us back the returns of the efforts that we put in. And so having a country like Kazakhstan having an offer in us importing and export businesses where they will buy our services and goods, and we are able to buy their services and goods. And we also know that this is also true for our homeland, the entire continent of Africa, but many countries in Africa has already offered the same type of partnership, as to where they also are inviting African Americans to come back home and be able to grow our homeland. And when all of those opportunities would be a real blessing if they're able to come true. But in the meantime, we will put our best efforts forward to try to make it happen. So we are going to continue networking with our European, but most of all our African brothers and sisters, because we all know that Africa is where we really, really want to be. So if that could possibly be where African Americans and Africans can realize that we need each other and what we can do for each other, I was sad to see what's going on in many parts of Africa, especially with the Ukrainians and the Russians, missionaries that have gone over into Africa, and it's I can see where they are trying to start many conflicts with one African country against another, so that they can benefit from our fighting and killing each other while they take away all the valuables of the country. So that's something, again, where I would love to see African Americans and Africans come together so we can put a stop to these Europeans who have for hundreds of years have really done nothing but enslave all of us, African Americans, and look like the entire continent of Africa. So like I said, Africa is where we really, really want to be. And if it can possibly, come true as to where African Americans and Africans can come together, and because to come together and live as one, and get rid of our enemy. Because we share the same enemies, and I hate to see it. These enemies are right here at home. Brother Aziz on the news today. The brother that was in the military, he went over to the sides, escaped to North Korea.
Right.
And
yeah.
North Korea sent them home. Sent back, but it's been reported something that we all knew, that the whole incident was a continuation of racism and how they treat our troops. That we're veterans, we already know how we were treated, and how, again, a continuation of our services to this country, only to get back hate and racism. So, it was good to know. And, you know, I had a feeling that the North Koreans would treat that brother fairly, and it seems like they did. He didn't come back to us in a coma. He didn't come back to us sick and beat up like some of those who called up in North Korea. He came back to us healthy, and I can't wait to hear from him, because I can't wait to hear from him just to see how he was treated in North Korea. So, and the sad thing to think, and is how he was treated in South Korea, the Korea where so many of us died and fought for. They put our brothers, put that young man into hard, hard labor for a simple assault case. And so something is wrong with that picture. But again, we're looking forward to hearing from that young man. And but like I said, it's about know what his story would be. So again, with that said, Brother Aziz, I don't have a real subject this evening when it comes to business. You know, it seems like I'm just about discussed everything I could possibly think of when it comes to business, and a business discussion, because we've been having these discussions now for 8 years. This is our 8th year on this blog.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two of us. And I went back into our archives, and I was looking at all the different discussions, all our different subjects, and my goodness, there are so many of them, until I asked myself, what could possibly be our subject today, because every subject we come up with now is a subject we've already talked about within the last 8 years. So, but again, we look forward to hearing from our audience. Maybe they can give us some new ideas and hopefully some new energy, because, I can't think of anything that we haven't already really talked about. And sometimes you feel like you ain't doing nothing but just talking. And I would hate to think that I am wasting anyone's time talking. And I know I don't want them wasting my time talking, because if you ain't doing but just talking, then as far as I am concerned, it's time to be quiet. We need to do something much more proactive than just talk.
Yes.
Brother Aziz, we're opening up our mics. But before we do, of course, you have your opening comments. And after that, we will open up our mics to our general audience, and hopefully some of our directors will be coming on, and we'll be hearing their comments. So Brother Aziz, I am going to be quiet and give you a chance to talk. I ain't going to say just talk, but to talk, Brother Aziz.
Thank you, Brother Bilal, and I'm going to somewhat cross over back and forth between what you were saying and some of the things I have to say also, because, our conversation is primarily about what we have been promoting for the last 8 years, networking and marketing black businesses, African-American businesses. And that's been our main focus. But however, there are all other kinds of things that have been happening around us that are related to business. And one of the things I realized a couple of days ago, I was looking at a program wherein I saw all this poverty that was in the Sudan and the war that's going on in the Sudan and how the country split in half. It's like a civil war in America back in the 1800s. The same people, but they're fighting over different ideas. And the main culprit, none of these people, they're fighting, but they don't have enough togetherness among them to buy the weapons that they're fighting one another with, anything like that. So where are they getting all these weapons for, and how are they paying for them? And it's one of the things that we realize all over Africa, where all these different fractions are fighting one side of the country against the other side of the country, at the culprit of supplying these weapons, or at the base of the supplier of the weapons for these different fighting factions, we find these European countries giving the, you know, different size these weapons to fight. This is how you settle your disagreements in there. We'll give you some advice on how to do it. Meanwhile, this is how you pay us. And what's going on is Africa is being robbed immensely of its natural resources, and the people are in poverty. It's not showing that with the resources they have, Africans shouldn't be nowhere on the planet Earth begging for nothing. Now, what I concluded was that in this thinking about our show and about Africans and their resources and shouldn't be begging anywhere, well, they're the two most wealthiest places on the planet Earth, in my opinion, is the continent of Africa, our African people, and the African-American community here in the United States of America. We are a gold mine. Everybody that comes to the United States to come over here just looking to make some money, open up a business, or supply a needy community, they look towards the African-American community because they say it's a gold mine there. And it's not something that I'm just saying out of my mouth without proof of it. The proof of it is any of the African-Americans that are listening to this program, walk out in your neighborhoods and see who owns the businesses there. See who owns the cleaners. See who owns the convenience stores. See who owns all of the businesses around that you go to, the little carryouts, the all-you-can-eat restaurants. And none of those do we own. And most of all, it's a great possibility that we don't work in any of those. So as a result of that, all we do is funneling money into this empty hole where there's no return on what we're putting it in for. We're not getting anything back out of it. And when I looked at that and said, wow, these are the two wealthiest places in the world, Africa and in the communities where I live, where my people live in there, what do we do to turn this around? And this is what the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association has been talking about over a period of time. It's asking brothers and sisters to come together, bring your businesses, let others know about them. Through our program, you other businesses and community people can learn about your businesses as well as sharing ideas with others. And this is what we want to see. You go through our communities, you look at the beauty supply sections, as much wigs as our sisters buy, as much hair oil or grease that we buy, our brothers and sisters buy, all of these types of conveniences that African-Americans use. I don't know about a great majority of the country, but I do know about the Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Richmond, Virginia area. We're talking maybe about a 400-square-mile area. I know that primarily in those areas, in the beauty supply areas, we don't own many of those supply outlets at all, if any. Just a few. I don't know of them, though, but I know it's a few. And I'm talking about in some densely populated areas in Maryland where we live. And those types of businesses are not, they're not owned by us. So what I'm saying is, looking at that and realizing the wealth in our communities, us as leaders in the community, however we may be or whatever, we need to focus more and more on putting businesses in our communities, seeking African-Americans that do have businesses. If they are in our community, support them. Support these businesses. This is how we grow. We're looking for financial institutions, African-American financial institutions that we can support as well as support us in our needs, because most of these banks we go to, they don't do anything for us. We can have good credit and all of that, and someone different than the African American can go in there and apply for credit, and he'll get different results, and may not be as good as our credit. So these are all the things that we're constantly fighting up against in our community, and one way to reach out and change that is owning businesses in our community, as well as especially our brothers and sisters down south, buying land, owning land. When you own land in America, you are really an American, because you have a voice as a landowner. You have something. People can't just run you off your land like that, even though we know of incidents wherein people have been run off their land for various reasons. Companies have bought land from other landowners, and one person didn't want to agree to sell their land. So the surrounding, the people bought the surrounding land around this one person. They didn't even have access to get in and out of their land. This is an incident that happened in Mississippi, where a big chemical company over in South Africa is in, I don't know, somewhere outside of Jackson, Mississippi. And African-American owned, he was the last holdout on this property. He couldn't even get in on his property because this big chemical company in South Africa wanted to buy it up. And boom, the whole African-American community was gone there. That once was a thriving community. The little parts of the section of that community that still exists, I was watching it on the documentary. They said, well, we don't have no more businesses in the community or anything like that. It's like everything has gone away. So here's an opportunity, if there was some money around, to put some businesses back in that community, some African-Americans. Put your business in there. You know, it's like like-minded people can come together and get together and form a business. We may not want to run it. You may just want to be an investor in someone that has a business plan that want to go in the business. And these are good things to do. This is how you see these malls, these big malls around. Doctors and lawyers and medical guys, they get together. And they got all this money they're making anyway. So they get with other guys like them, and they put their money together and say, let's buy this property and create a mall. We have a place to put our businesses in, and we can rent out the other stores to other business people, and big businesses come in. Well, we can do that in our community the same way. Those of us that have money to invest, if you can find other people like that that want to do it with you, and do that. So, you know, that's what I have to say starting out. You know, it's been a trying time for me. I've had a lot of things to go over trying to talk about dealing with businesses, with people and that. And it's been like my cup runneth over with stuff to do. But yet and still, we want to see people that want to go and do business in our community. Please get together with one another. Let them know who you are. Get together with one another and see if you can't start some business in your community in that. That's what I got to say is open the brother of the line. We want to let some of the other people come on that's on there that we know it's on.
Yes, Brother Aziz. Well, listen, we appreciate your comments. And of course, so many things that you just discussed are very relevant, very, very relevant. I want to, I am going to go ahead and open up our mics to our listeners, but I do want to, one of the things that you discussed is you were talking about businesses and the power of why so many different countries, when they come here to the United States, they look forward to coming to our communities do business in our communities. Well, you know, Brother Aziz, when you started looking at the power of that black dollar, I don't blame you for coming to the United States, for coming to the black communities. You have an African-American community that if you looked at their retail spendings, if you looked at the taxations that we pay, and if you looked at the monies that we put in to charitable donations, especially in our churches, in our religious organizations, it's easy to equate those figures to be over $3 trillion in excess. Our marketing spendings, when it comes to our spendings just in the market alone, in 2022, our retail spendings came to $1.4 trillion, and that was just retail spendings. This year is projected to be more than $1.9 trillion. Brother Aziz, I was just mentioning that the country of Kazakhstan was inviting us to come to the embassy to continue a business discussion as to where they can do import and export businesses with us. But I was looking at the currency of Kazakhstan. To go to New York, and one of the questions that I wanted to get into was the power of their currency. And from going on the internet and looking at that, Kazakhstan, 2022 GMP was, as far as American monies, was $2.5 billion. And that was their entire GMP, $2.5 billion. Our African Americans, just our spendings and retail spendings last year was $1.4 trillion. So again, if we compare it, our spendings that we spend in stores, other than our own, other than stores that we own, because we only own about 4% of businesses in our community, African Americans, we're about 96% consumers. And so our consumer spendings $1.4 trillion, and here is a country whose entire national growth product was $2.5 billion. That means that just our consumer spendings was three times more than this country, this entire country, produced. And this is one of the, as far as $2.5 trillion, and like I said, we came up, just our consumer spending is three times more than that. Well, if you look at Africa, Nigeria was probably the most advanced spending and the most advanced monies earned. They came close to $1 billion, but no other African country could account for $1 billion, just $1 billion, in their national growth product. So again, this is what I mean about African Americans and our African brothers and sisters. If there is a way, and I say that if there is a way, and I pray that there is, that we can come together, look at the power of growth national products that we would be bringing to any country in Africa. We would probably be making Africa, just off Jump Street, one of the richest countries, not in the world, but one of the richest countries in the entire continent of Africa and many parts of Europe. They would be outdoing them. But like you said, with the resources in Africa and with the cash that African Americans could bring there, my goodness, look at the look at how powerful, just projecting how powerful the two brothers and sisters, African and African Americans, and the power that we would be possessing economically. So you are bringing up a very, very good point, a point that we have discussed many times on this station, but a point that we have to continue to discuss because, like you said, here in the United States, we, if you compare it, the African-American as an independent country, if we were an independent country, we would be around the fifth or the sixth richest country as far as income in the entire world. So,
that's saying a lot.
It's gigantic. But even though we bring in that kind of money, white folks, Caucasians, are in control of it all. So we must find, being that we can't find economics freedom here in this country, we must find it somewhere because we're just too, our income is too powerful, and we came here as slaves to make these white folks of Europe rich. We must put a stop to it. They said that slavery ended in 1865, but when you start seeing how much economics we bring into the country and the African Americans' conditions of how we live in this country, you can't tell me that we are consumer slaves. We are consumer slaves, and that's where we're trying to find a way as to where we can take our values, and whether it be to any country, but like I said, Africa is our chosen country. We are Africans. We were African Americans.
Yeah.
We will always be African Americans. But we are still Africans, and our motherland. We own Africa as far as Almighty God is concerned, just as much as our African brothers and sisters own Africa. So Africa is something that African Americans in Africa must save. And so we need to come together so we can save each other and save our motherland. So with that said, brothers, with Brother Aziz, we're going to go ahead and open our mics up, and we're going to see if we, I think Brother Uzmar, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Peace, Brother Uzmar. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Okay, we're going to be right back with you, Brother Uzmar. We got you on the station now. We're going to see if we have any of our other directors on. We're going to open our mics. Any of our other directors that are directors of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, we ask you to introduce yourself if you're on. And Sister Slicer, are you with us?
This is Sister Aisha.
Oh, Sister Aisha, of course. How you doing this evening?
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, so again, we're going to continue our conversation, Brother Uzmar. Any comments that you'd like to make at this time?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment about some of the things you said.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I heard you say that the Russians are coming to Africa as missionaries. Is that what you really mean?
They are. They are. They're as missionaries as we speak.
I don't know. Let me give you a little background about what is happening in that regard. Russia has never owned one colony in Africa. And China, the same thing. But when Africa was fighting this colonial government, the only countries that came to our assistance for us to see the independence that we see now today is Russia and China. And I can definitely tell you that they are responsible for a little bit of stability and options that we have now in the, even in terms of economics. And the one of the reasons why Africa has all the resources, but they don't have the Africa is not poor. The Africans are poor. And the reason is the same thing that is happening right here. If you look at it, you find out that even the Arab Americans here in Michigan today, they control capital. You know, they have more control of capital relative to their population, their size, than the African Americans who have been here for all this time. And why is this so? That is the question. You see,
that's right.
they have an organization here that they call Detroit Research. And they have a radio show just like this one here. And what we really have here is transit wealth. It just goes through our hands and go out. You see, and if you compare that type of wealth to any other place, it's really economic injustice. It doesn't really add up. You see, for example, you know, like I can buy a handful of peanuts in my country, if you look at the exchange rate, for maybe less than 10 cents. If I go to a dollar store where everything's supposed to be cheap, that's the thing, it's costing me $1.25. So if you look at economics from that perspective, you begin to really make real judgment about what is happening here. And one of the suggestions I made to them, I said, what we need to do is to learn from the people who came Like, there's a city here they call Hamtramck. Hamtramck was habited by the Polish immigrants who came here many years ago to work in the car factories. Now, if you go to Hamtramck, it looks like you are somewhere in Bangladesh. And how did they come about doing that? They came here. They didn't get no loans. They went to the junkyards, took those old tires, came and opened a place. They didn't even have heat in those areas. They used propane heating system for them to keep changing those tires. And that is how they were able for them to build their own little businesses. And I can go on and on and on and on. And this, I've seen it, you know, I've seen it. We here, in what we have is really the experience, which is valuable. The African-American experience and the intellectual know-how that I know that exists here is what is really of value. Besides that, there's nothing that is of value.
That's right.
You see, yeah, so the way forward is for us to really begin to look at things from that point of view. I remember when I just joined this organization, I said, well, I would suggest that I want to meet with a group of people. I say, I don't mind. I can drive even if we have to go to South Carolina. For us to really take 2 points that we identify as a beginning of what we want to do. You know, then we can focus on that, put up a program together, because the only thing I've seen here that is consistent and that's moving every day is really moving in the right direction is Sister Aisha's program. We need to have something else like that, or else we'll be really just entertaining ourselves about who we are, what we have, and all that stuff. It's not going to help us. It's not going to take us anywhere. We have to have one or more programs like Sister Aisha's program, and we consistently plan and to develop it. But everything else that is happening, I don't know. My humble opinion is that we are just entertaining ourselves. So, yeah, you know, that is really what is happening, you know, and that is why even the war that's going on in the, going back to the Russian involvement in Africa, yes, a lot of young people in Africa today, they are really going for, in support of bringing Russia in. Not that they want to depend on Russia, but they know that at least they have demonstrated in the past that they were able for them to sacrifice to really help African liberation. Like Putin, the current Russian leader, he was in Tanzania. He was in Tanzania in those days. There's a picture of him helping Africans to fight Portugal. And what was Portugal? Portugal had access to NATO weapons. We didn't have access to anything. The only people that came to our aid is Russia and China. And later on, even Cuba came to our aid. So that one is like that. As far as Sudan is concerned, Sudan, I know for a fact that people have been really instigating that war way, way, way back, almost about 20-something years ago. I have a friend whose son was in the U.S. Air Force. I know that most of the things I say get me into trouble sometimes, but I have to tell the truth. So he was flying over there at that time, covert activities and all that. He's been going there for a long time, you see. And there are people, definitely, who are there, who are giving them weapons, you know, to fight these wars. Even though they cannot afford to fight these wars. For example, like in my country, we had a civil war. And the reason why we had a civil war is because we have a precious metal, that mineral, that somebody can just take in his pocket and go somewhere and make some money out of it. And I have pictures of this young boy carrying this AK-47, and they are just wearing, you know, no shoes. They don't even have boots. All they gave them was, weapons and drugs. And they created havoc. So we experienced it for 10 years in my country. So I don't know. You know, the thing is, you know, we have a long way to go, but I think we can start somewhere. And the way I see it is that we start and be consistent doing like the sister does. That's the only way. It's not many programs. You can feel like I suggested several programs. I mentioned the other day that Africa has no reason for it to be penalized or be impacted by the war in Ukraine. And I mentioned that there's a cassava product that we can bring forward to grow that can produce more flour that is even more better quality and, you know, and healthy than wheat flour. And I said, you know, that we can be able for to really work with African-American farmers. If wheat need to be added to that flour for to make bread, they can also benefit from it. Because Africa, as far as we are spending billions of dollars buying wheat from Ukraine, Russia, and the United States. But the African-Americans are not part of that deal. So if they are here, they are not really, they are losing their farms and stuff like that. We have to find a way for to utilize their know-how in farming so that we can be able for to make that type of cooperation. And I also talk about like the housing. We have housing needs. If a country like the United States have housing problem, just imagine what is happening in the rest of the other part of the world. We have energy deficiency. I told you a brother have developed a program here at Catering University. He uses the byproduct of that cassava that we can process and eat. The byproduct can be produce hydrogen from that byproduct, which we can use for to power fuel cells. In that case, we can have a power supply and a processing system in every village in Africa. And what would that will help also for them to produce enough cassava so that it can't be able for them to depend on anybody else. But the only thing is, you know, we have to really just seize that idea about us having some money here and then think about programs wherein we can be able for to really humble ourselves like they do. Come here, they sit down in this broken stores and all that stuff, and they will be able for them to open stores, do certain things, and you really need for you to come and see Hamtramck and see, Dearborn, Michigan. You see, these are communities that came, of course, that's what they did. They came and found out that we, as blacks, we don't own anything. So they came and opened stores. As a matter of fact, when I came here in the 70s, there was so much violence in those stores. They used to have their own people as security guards standing in front of the door with a gun. So they survived and they made money out of it. And I think based on what I read, the Jews did the same thing. So it's nothing new. You see? But we have to be able for to be humble ourselves, maybe get dirty a little bit, and then forget because like this is, if you don't have capital in a capitalist country, you are not a citizen. So, you know, I don't know. I'm sorry. Maybe I sometimes get emotional when I'm talking about these things here. But so you have my sympathy. But that's what I have to contribute. Yeah.
Carrie.
Yeah, but Sister Aisha is doing the right thing. You know, we have to have something that we have to focus on. At least another thing. Maybe, you know, she has one. Let's think about another one also. We put those things in writing. Like even to talk to Kakistan, we have to have something solid. Maybe as a group or as individual organizations, we have to present that. You see, that is what we can do. We can be able for to tell them, okay, this is, we find out what they have that can be used and what we can get from them and what they can get from us. But we have to be in writing. It has to be concrete. It has to be something that somebody can see and they can be able for them to share it among themselves.
Yeah, so,
yeah. Sister Aisha, I have something for you later on, but we'll talk about that later on.
Inshallah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, we very good point, Brother Uzma. You have some very good points to be considered, but that's what the meeting is all about. We haven't even had the meeting with them yet, but yes, when we... are able to have the meeting, these are some of the points and some of the things that we will be able to talk about. Is, again, what can we do for you and what can you do for us, but not only in Kakistan, but also in Africa. We have to have meetings, and the only way we're going to know what we can do for any country. Because, like I said, we know that, yes, we have, I can't think of anything that the African-American don't have, really. When I say we have, the question is, what is it that we don't have? I think we are well prepared as any peoples in the world to go forward. Our only thing is that we have to deal with racism. We have to deal with situations where we're continuing to fight to gain a return for the huge investments that we make. So. That's why in my opening statement I said we're looking for a place where we can invest and have a fair return on our investments, because this is what we have this is what is constantly being taken away from us in our country. We have made a huge investment in this United States and this democracy. Matter of fact, I think we probably have made the biggest investments of any single group of peoples in this country. But our returns, we can't get returns. And the returns is because, again, our own governments all over this country, not only federal governments, but state governments, try to do everything they possibly can to take away the dividends that we rightfully should be receiving. And when I say the dividends, I'm talking about the investments that we have made into this democracy, into this country, and for nothing to be, and for own governments and the peoples that call themselves Caucasians to take away from. There was a report just recently where the Supreme Court had to go into the state of Alabama. The state of Alabama passed legislated laws saying that African Americans would only have one voting precinct in an entire state. One voting precinct. precinct that would cover an entire state the size of Alabama. And that government precinct would be way out in the country somewhere where your large city, large urban communities don't live and wouldn't be able to get to that precinct to vote. So they don't want us to even have the right to even vote in a democracy that we fought, died for, right from the very beginning. So, yes, we are looking for, and like I said, Africa is our preference, but we're looking to for any place as to where we can say that this is an investment that we can make to your country, and we know we're going to get a fair return on our because we know we're bringing a large, large amount of revenue and resources with us. We welcome your comments, but again, we welcome the opportunity as to where we can grow, and we don't have to worry about racism and hate, because that's what African Americans have been facing ever since we came to this country, and of course ever since what happened to us by being sold from Africa. So with that said, our mics are open, brothers and sisters. It's around 8 o'clock, so our mics are going to be open. But at this point, I'm no longer the director. Sister Aisha, from this point, is our director. And I'll be joining her along with my Aziz, and I will be her co-host. So, Sister Aisha, we're going to turn it over to you, and we will continue this conversation through you.
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone. I hope you can hear me well.
Assalamu
Thank you, Brother Bilal, Brother Aziz, and Brother Usman, for getting us started tonight. And Brother Usman, we will talk in the very near future, inshallah. I look forward to it. But, you know, I want to mention about the GDP in the different countries in comparison to the African-American GDP in the U.S. Our GDP rate is, and Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, you all correct me if I'm wrong, because you all are the experts. You all are the specialists in finance, not me. But even though we have a high GDP as a group of people, and there are African countries who are extending an invitation for us to migrate to those countries to become citizens. Our GDP is based on the economy. It's made possible as a result of the high economy of the U.S. And so, but what many of the African countries do realize, and this is only what I believe, I haven't seen any data stating this or proving it or disproving it, but I think what many of the African countries are especially interested in is not are the retirees who can carry with them a stable income like Social Security or retirement benefits from the different industries. That money can go into the banking system of the African countries, and it would certainly shore up the GDP of those countries. But if we as a large population of people migrate, and we're depending on the economy of the country, African countries, to give us a job, well, we're not being such a great service to that country as far as their GDP and race and the standard of living in the country. So, and I mention this because just this week I had at least two of my dear friends to tell me that they were migrating to different African countries. And it seems like every week or so, someone will contact me and say, you know, this friend has migrated or they are preparing to migrate. And, of course, I'm saying, have you really given this a lot of thought? I'm not saying don't migrate, but this is something that we have to consider as a group of people. But I do know people who have migrated, and, of course, husband and wife have retired, and so they have a joint monthly income of well over $5,000. And so that is put in the banks in these particular African countries, and that's what the government wants. And it's good that they want to bring us into the country. But there has to be some kind of balance. And I don't know if – I think the African countries have thought this out well, but I don't know if the African Americans have thought it out well. So any comments on my – a lot of it is assumption and some dialogue with different people. But this is how I read the whole issue of migrating to and becoming a citizen in an African country. And this is not to discourage that, because I have traveled to many African countries and served as consultant to heads of state in these countries. And I have seen a great deal of things that I would want to change, or I would want to have some type of impact on, but I don't know if that's possible. So any comments on my comments from anyone?
I have a comment.
Yes.
Yeah. Sister, definitely, I don't think that this is really the African plan. What, from the beginning, when Kwame Nkrumah was trying for him to really, he's the one that initiated something like this. And then he brought W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, to Ghana. I think what Africa really needs is the know-how. Because what we need is adding value to the product we have. That is Africa's solution. The retirement that is coming from here, which I am aware of, I'm part of that. It's not going to have that impact the calculus. Because the Africans, the diaspora, they are making a lot of contributions in that regard, and it's not really having any impact. What we are looking for is the know-how so that we can be able for us to add value to what Africa has, so that Africa will not spend its money like it's doing right now, you know, with everybody. So that is what I think Africa needs. You see?
Okay.
Because there are a lot of Africans in diaspora, you know, doing all type of jobs, earning all type of money, retiring, going back home and all that stuff, including myself. They really need from me is the know-how, the little bit of what we have learned, so that we can be able for us to add value to what Africa really has. And that is
very
what
good.
The world comes about.
Well,
yeah.
I thank you for your comments. And it's certainly, I do believe that as well. I certainly do. And I hope that the African Americans that I know who are migrating, all of them are highly educated. They are not going there necessarily to add value with their education, because they are retirees, and they are going there for peace of mind. And of course, many of them said, "Yes, I'll do volunteer in the schools or any place that I can, but not to be a centerpiece in adding value." But I do believe what you're saying is correct, Brother Usman, that is what Africa needs, a group of people to come in and add value and how the you know, the concern and the intent are given to Africa as opposed to just taken from Africa. So yes, I do believe that.
Sorry, sure.
Brother Bilal, you had a comment.
Yes, ma'am. You know, I was saying earlier, when you start, to go to Africa to live as a citizen is one thing, and I look forward to that type of serenity of living in Africa, and because we know how suppressive it is to live here in this country. As African Americans, we've been living here for so long and going through so much until, yes, it would be a big relief to go to Africa to live, because as an African American, I could go to Africa and live, and I could live very, very well. $5,000 of American dollars, I mean, look at how many thousands of dollars that would be of the African, whatever country you would go to. But my point is when you start talking about Africa has this need and African Americans have that need, and we're all looking to do something about helping each other's needs.
Yes.
And now you're talking about becoming vested with each other, investing in each other. And so when you start talking about investing in each other, when I make an investment, I am looking for a return off of my investment. So
again, everybody.
Well, again, and I am looking for a return off of my investment. So as African Americans investing into Africa, what would the African Americans return? What is the proposed return for the African American? What is Africa proposing to give the African Americans? And what is America proposing to give the Africans for both of them to say we have a valuable return on our resources, and our resources is our services and our goods? That's my question.
Okay, I can give an example. You know, I can give you an example. For example, like, let's take any resource. You know, for example, like, let's say gold. African Americans find maybe expert miners. They get the equipment, go mine the gold, process it over there, and then sell it into the international market. Pay the local taxes. That is one thing we can be. That's one thing we can do. For example, like also we're talking about food. Let's say we invest into bread flour production. I know that Europeans and the Asians and all that, they're making billions of dollars out of poor Africa by selling them wheat flour. But if we can be able to say, okay, well, we're going to put some resources together and go and process this on the ground, make the flour, sell the flour to the bakers, and they can be able for them to get the same money. The money can be converted into whatever. If you want to be converted, you want to buy gold, or you want to buy diamonds, you want to do something, you can do those type of things. So there are many, many ways, but this is just something that we need to sit down, and then you are being financial people. We sit down and put it down in writing, and then go through it and then come up with a solid proposal.
So there will be a way that you can be able for you to specify and see exactly how you're going to get your returns and see if you're going to get something out of it, if you're going to get protection. And I have mentioned it before to you about the protections that are available and even the resources that are available. And I told you for that their money is available. And even though these Europeans or the Caucasians, they have business in this country, but they are still investing outside, in Africa. They have businesses all over the world, and the money making money out of that.
And the
U.S. government can provide that kind of assistance, that kind of protection. And I told you that what we need to do is for us to become clients of the Minority Business Development Minority Business Association in Washington, D.C. And they can provide you with all that information. Go ahead.
If you would, we could share into this discussion together. Let me ask you a question. When you start talking about African Americans can invest in Africa and we can invest in the gold, we can invest into the gold mine, what Africans can sell us a gold mine? What Africans own their own gold mines?
Okay, I can send a proposal tomorrow that Africans have a gold mine that is there, is developed, is everything is in detail. If you want to go for it, you and I can go to Africa and we can go and investigate, or you can do it through the American Embassy. I have a proposal right now in my hand.
We don't have to go to Africa.
Do you want the proposal? That's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm telling you now that I have a proposal that is in my hand right now that I can send to you. The site is owned by an African, is developed by an African engineer, and all the minerals are there. You give it to an expert geologist. He can verify it. I have that right now.
Yes, Brother Usman. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Bilal.
If Africans own their own gold mines, and if they're pulling gold and diamonds out of their own mines, they would be filthy rich. Why aren't they filthy rich if they own these gold? Now, the folks who do own the gold mines, which are basically Europeans, and I know most of them, plenty Jews. But why are the Africans filthy rich if they own their own gold mines?
Yeah, can I answer that question for you? This is what I'm telling you about. That is why I was disputing Sister Aisha's statement. That Africa is looking for retirees who can go there for them to get their retirees. I don't think so. It's not part of the equation that I know about. I am from Africa. I know Africa. And I know America. I lived there for 52 years in the ghetto here. So I know. That is why we are trying to say we need this know-how, how we can be able for us to add value to this mineral. That is what the world is. Right now, the world is owned by the Jews, like you said. Yes, the diamond mines in Sierra Leone are owned by the beer. The one in South Africa, they're owned by the beer. So what we are trying to do... Go ahead.
In 2009...
Yes.
In 2009, I went on Hajj. And when I was on Hajj, I was with those who were from your country, Sierra Leone. And the Sierra Leones, because I was the only African American there, everybody else was basically Africans. But those from Sierra Leone, and I love them because they're the ones who looked after me. But the people from Sierra Leone, from hearing their conversations, I've never been there. Like I said, I was with them, I was amongst them, and they looked after me. And I can't tell them how much I thank these people. But at the same time, hearing their stories, they were seen to be so poor they couldn't even build their own mass jets. I mean, you talk. That's it. So here you're telling me that gold mine, and you own diamonds, and you can't afford. I mean, these peoples were poor. It was dirt poor. And
you know, you and I can debate this forever, we can debate it forever. I can go and begin to tell you exactly about us here,
brother,
about African America.
Brother Usman,
it's not important.
Brother Usman,
yes.
Brother Usman,
yes.
And Brother Bilal, I think that both of you have a point. And there are some Africans who own gold mines, and there are some Africans who will extend an invitation for you to come in to be in partnership with them. But it is a difficult process, Brother Usman. And it is a difficult process. And I know from experience how difficult that process is. It's not unbelievable, and it can work possibly. But one of the things that we have to always be mindful of is that, remember when the United States government passed the Patriot Act, KYC, Know Your Neighbor? You all remember that?
Yes.
Well, we're still operating under the remnants of that. And that simply means internationally that the financial world and also the world of trade is highly affected by that Patriot, the Dodd-Frank, the Patriot Act, the KYC concept. And it has especially affected many of the African countries, especially those countries that border the DNC, like Tanzania and some of the other countries. So it is possible. It's not that many Africans, based on my experience in that industry, who actually own their mines, but it's not unrealistic to get license from the government to operate a mine, you know. So I think that a lot of that is possible, but it takes a lot of resources to even attempt to get it done. And as Americans, there are mechanisms in place in America to facilitate that because America has to export. And so there are advantages. But for now, let me mention both Brother Bilal and Brother Usman. There's another issue, and we'll come back to this if it's okay with the two of you and everyone else listening, that we go to another point of major concern that I came across this week. So can we come back to this topic at another time?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And Brother Usman, if you have something, you can shoot it over to us. We have the capabilities of reading those contracts and clearly understanding them, because that's one of the areas that we have had quite a few years of experience in, okay? So one of the issues that came to my attention this week was the issue facing our community. We know that climate change is devastating, and we have that issue that we have to constantly deal with. Mm-hmm. Economic disparity is another issue, education decline, and many other issues that are facing the African-American community. But the one that issue that came to my attention this week was the suicide rate among our teens. This is becoming an epidemic. Now, historically, suicide rates among black youth have been lower than for other ethnic groups. That's the historical trend, other ethnic groups. But this has changed. And this report that came from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health really put it in perspective, and they reported that suicide rates for black youth ages 10 through 17 has increased by 144%. 144% between 2007 and 2020. Now, this is a major contributing factor that's caused some of the contributing factors to this high rate of suicide among our teens are, of course, socio-ecological factors and structures, and we know that, including institutional racism, living in poverty, single-parent households, absence of the extended family structure, decline of our community support base. These are some of the contributing factors to the suicide rate among our young people. Now, both boys and girls are impacted by this increased suicide, but the black boys up to age 19 have more than twice the suicide rate of black girls in the same age group, based on what the Center for Disease Control and Prevention has said. Black boys are more likely than black girls to attempt suicide and by using more lethal methods such as guns, knives, and so forth. However, girls are more prone to use drugs or prescription medication. The CDC reported that in 2021 that one in five black high school students reported seriously considering attempting suicide within the last year. They reported this in 2021, and they are saying that within the last year, school year primarily, one in five black high school students seriously considered attempting suicide. 18% of those had a suicide plan already crafted, and 15% of those reported attempting the suicide. I don't know if you all see this, our audience, if you see this as an epidemic that is taking place within the African American community, when our young people, the next generation, the ones that we are working for every day, are constantly dealing with the issue of suicide. They are more exposed to guns. They are living in poverty. They are having firsthand impact or direct firsthand relationship and exposure to family members who are also depressed and considering suicide. And they are constantly being exposed to police brutality, rejection, and racist attitudes within the society. So my question is, how do we, as the elders in the community, help our young people? I was amazed to see such data. And, of course, I usually follow through on back-checking the data. And one source told me, oh, Aisha, for 2023 and projected 2024, it's going to be much higher than that. So can I get some feedback or questions on that?
I'll be glad to, but I'll give someone else a chance before I come. But I'll be more than happy to comment, but maybe someone else would like to go before me because they think that maybe I'm talking ahead of them. I'll give someone a chance. chance if they'd like to go before.
If anyone, Brother Bilal is asking if anyone would like to make a comment on there. And the ones who are listening, you all are parents or you are grandparents. And these are your kids because they are certainly my kids. And we have got to stop this. And did you know our young people were contemplating and dealing with this issue of committing suicide on a daily basis like this?
Sister Aisha?
Yes.
Yeah. Bobby Wallace? Bobby? Bobby, are you on the phone? Are you on the line? Bobby? Yeah, because you see, I want to answer, but I want somebody to listen because she was there when I proposed a solution to such a program. She and I went and we discussed some issue with a senior city council woman that I know for a long time, and then I told her. I said, when I came to Detroit in the 70s, all the stores, the representative, all of them were African-Americans. But now we don't have a single one representing a major black city in the United States. The same thing with the population. So I proposed, I said, what do we probably need to do? And I wrote a proposal. I gave it to them for us to start with 10 acres of land wherein we can be able to design the system. And I discussed it, I think, with Brother Aziz as well, maybe. I discussed with him, wherein we can be able to use even the repurposed containers, start building a community wherein we can address all the issues that made black people to migrate or to leave the city. That is education, employment, security. There's technology available right now with AI that can be able for it to monitor a child from his home to a kindergarten and even tutor the child. So there's these resources that are available. And then I thought, I said, probably maybe if we can do something like that in Detroit, we can duplicate something like that overseas. Bobby Wallace,
I'm not so sure if the issue is to monitor what their lifestyle, or monitor.
Not to monitor their lifestyle. Doesn't have anything to do with monitor the lifestyle. It's because one thing is you talked about education. You see, this community, we can be able to design a way, not that the monitoring is for the security, for them to be secure, and they will have control over that technology as well, that is not going to be used against them or anybody. So it was not meant like that. Well, what I can do, I can email you the concept. You take a look at it yourself, because that is exactly what I was looking at, and then it may not be a perfect one, but that's a start. So I do something to that effect,
okay.
And then because those are the things that really make. I say because the way I look at it, in about even 20 years from now, Detroit is not going to have any. It's not going to have any footprint to show that black people were here at some time. They were the majority.
Well, Brother Usman, we're hoping. We don't think that that's going to happen in 20 years because we still have some momentum. So I tell you what. Let's hear what Brother Bilal's comment on that.
Okay. All right.
Miss Aisha, first of all,
yes.
When it comes to African Americans and the problems that we have in this country, I don't think, and I with all due respect, Brother Uzma, outsiders cannot solve our problems. But let me just give you my opinion. When you say a mine, is a terrible thing to waste. And that's something that has been going on, and we've been saying that for a long time. Mind is a terrible thing to waste, especially when you start talking about a person starting around 4 or 5 years old, and that mind is developing, and all of a sudden it flips on up to around 8, if it's lucky enough to make it to 18, but start developing at 4 years old, right on up into their early teens. When you have a situation where 95% of all the teachers that black child have to deal with from the moment it leaves its parents at age around 4 or 5 years old and go into this educational system, and this educational system is all white. The same white folks who are doing everything to destroy us. And what's the best, the easiest person to destroy? Our youth. Our youth who do not know anything. A mind that is developing. And that mind has to deal with racism. Sister Aisha, you know about the situation where you had a 5-year-old to bring a gun to school, and he shot his white teacher. Now, they never told us the full story there, but a 5-year-old bought a gun, shot his white teacher. And like I said, so when you have a situation where you are dealing with what we as an adult are dealing with, and we as an adult, it's hard for us to deal with, but here it is, a child, our babies, when they leave our home and go under the protection of 95% of the entire nation, all of their teachers are white. And these white folks are proven. No wonder our kids are killing. It's a relief to kill yourself. Racism is that devastating. And who hasn't dealt with what we have been dealing with ever since slavery, ever since we were sold here? It's easy for others to comment. They didn't go through the hell that no other peoples that ever gone through at any point of humanity's history as African Americans have gone through. So our kids, it is easy. It is an escape to their life. You know, and these are, like I said, our babies. But at the same time, Sister Aisha, do you realize a veteran, let me give you the right statistics. Every day, there are nothing less than 14 veterans taking their lives. The devastation that you can put on a person's mind is inconceivable. When you start talking about putting this devastation on our babies, where can they escape? Where is their relief? And if we can come up with the answer to that, then we'll be able to save our babies. But until we can tell them where there is relief in their lives, yes, it doesn't surprise me the suicide rate. It doesn't surprise me the hell that our kids are going through, especially African-American kids. But until we can tell them where there is relief, and how can we tell them where there is relief when, as adults, we are also looking for relief? Like I said, African-Americans, and this business of hate and racism, you see, it's easy to comment. It's easy to say, well, I got a politician. I got this. I got that. You don't have nothing. No one has nothing. Because, again, where is the relief? That's my comment.
Well, you know, Brother Bilal, I do understand clearly what you're saying. And if you remember, back in 1964, pre-integration, there were many school systems throughout the U.S. who did the experimental integration in 64. And that was to see if the process of integration, full integration, will work. And, of course, they sent black students from the black school to the white school as an experiment. This happened throughout the country, and it also happened in the area, in my community. And I constantly say when I'm asked to talk on this subject that integration was the most horrific, devastating experience that ever happened in my life.
That's
it
right.
It was the worst thing that ever happened to me. So much so that my family got together with relationship, and we knew that they had to send me out of America because of the devastation of integration. And our can you all still hear me? I have a lot of background noise here. Hello? And our leaders, as much as they tried to put together a plan that would take in consideration our sensitivities and all of these things that we were going through, there was not, and this is what one leader told my parents, there was not one model of this system called integration in the world that they could look to and study that model. They could not find one. And so they had to put things together. They had no blueprint on integration. It did not exist. And so they had to put it together based on what they thought would be the best for us. But in my case and the case of many other students who were part of the experimental group, it devastated us. It was horrible. And that's when I realized that people could be absolutely mean in their spirit, because we came from segregated community, but it was a community that we built. We had our commerce, we had our health facilities, we had everything in our community. And we had our foundation, our religious foundation, and we had people who actually loved us. I mean, our neighbor, the woman down the street, the people across town, they loved us, and they wanted us to excel. So you had a whole lot of mamas and daddies when you walked from one side of town to the other.
That's right.
But that was totally wiped out when we started this process of integration, and the first group of students all over the country, we talked about this with each other, and we know that this was the worst thing that could have happened to us as a people.
Yep.
So, our
most successful time in our history was during the time of segregation, financially, so and socially. Our most successful time was during segregation. You didn't hear anything about anyone committing suicide in the black community. It was unheard of.
Yep, totally. I never heard of such a thing.
So again, that's what happens, like you said, when we integrated and the leader who brought Islam into this country called us black Muslims, he called them devils. And I don't know if he was wrong or if he was right, but I do know that we're living in hell ever since we integrated with Caucasians.
Well,
so
I have not. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying your remarks, and I think my remarks are basically the same. I think we have identified our problem because, again, if you think that sending your kids to a school where someone hates your child to the point of they like to see your child totally destroyed, and if that's going to be your teacher, then what is your child going to do about finding relief?
Yes, I agree with you, especially our young children. And
so you start talking about disaster, and I know that's your specialty. Just think of the disaster that African Americans go through every day when they wake up. Only time they can find relief is when they go to sleep.
Yeah. And this is happening to our young people in the school system, in the communities. And I contribute integration to playing a major part in the destruction of our communities. And the cell, and we were sold a false promise. It has not materialized yet. And we are now, when you start, any society start losing their young people, and the historians in the audience, tell me of a society where their young people have decided, many of them in great numbers, are deciding to kill themselves. What society in history is that? And if anybody knows that society, tell us next Wednesday night, because I want to know that society. We want to look at it. But I don't know of any other society in the world where the young people are choosing to take their lives in large numbers because the trauma and the stress of being in this society make them want to leave. And this is how they are attempting to do it. So I think that we as African American people, we this is a wake-up call. Because we want to live to pass on everything to the next generation. Our young people continue on this path. That will annihilate us. But more than that, what would we as the elders have done to perpetuate this trend now that we know about it? We've got to stop it. We've got to put some things in place to stop this trend from taking place. So now you can see what the teachers are saying in the school system. I have a daughter who is a teacher, and she's constantly informing me of how depressed the students are, how the students don't care. They don't like their lives. They don't like themselves. How students are so pushed by this society into this artificial world of changing up the way they look, changing up the way they talk. Every 6 months, the styles are changing. And so it's forcing our young people to constantly be in a rush to keep up with what's going on. And this age of all of this stuff that's taking place in the society that's attacking their conscience level, these are things that are detrimental to them. And we have got to do something about it. So I don't pretend to have all of the answers. I have a lot of grief about it, but I would like to have some answers. And so we have to depend on our audience. Many of you are out there thinking. Tell us what you think. See if we can put some programs together to help our young people. Or do we as the elders have to stand up with a new type of consciousness to show our young people that we are still their protectors and we still want the best for them? So we have to do it, whether it's in our religious institutions or in our communities, or we go to where they are and let them know that we have their back and we're going to support them. And I think this is where we have fallen short. So I'm open for any comments. If not, I would just like to mention that we are coming through the heat season. It's from May to October. And hopefully we will see this high heat changing. If by the end or the middle of October we are still in a serious heat wave in the different cities throughout the U.S., then we are headed for some serious weather, some serious storms developing. And so most of the science people are keeping their eyes on this heat season to see if it does begin to diminish throughout the country. But continue to be vigilant and protect yourselves and make sure that you stay hydrated and make sure that you are protecting your families and stay mindful of climate change. Yes, we are in the process of forming partnerships with nonprofits, with community organizations, with faith-based organizations, and we will continue to do so. Bring your organization care to the radio show on Wednesday night and listen to how we can form partnerships. We're going to have to do this as a collective. We're going to have to collaborate. And yes, there are federal funds out there for many things, but we also have resources within our community. We don't need federal funds to be able to sit and listen to a training program on how you can protect your family in the event and when we have a natural disaster. It doesn't take a grant. It takes your desire to save yourself and to save your family. I did find out, and you all stop me, we only have a couple of minutes. I did find out that the young people in the public school system are experiencing a great deal of anxiety because they don't know much about climate change. The schools are not giving them the information that they need on how to protect their families and themselves. And this is what we do. We have got to reach out to the schools. But there are limitations, because when we talk about natural disaster, it causes emotional disturbance in a lot of the young people. So therefore, we have to talk about this on the level of 18 and up. And hopefully the parents will talk to their children about what the family is going to do when the natural disaster lands on their doorstep or before it lands on their doorstep. They have to do this within the family. We do not encourage young people to come to the training because it's too traumatic for them. And they have been traumatized enough. But they are talking about climate change, and they are talking about Maui, Hawaii, and they are talking about the storms, Ophelia, wondering if it was going to hit them. And the parents need to start talking to the children, but the parents can't talk to the children unless the parents know. And this is where we are. So, Brother Bilal, with that in mind, and we only have a couple of more minutes, I'm going to turn it back over to you unless there is something else that you would like for me to comment on.
Please enter code.
System is in order. Okay. We certainly appreciate your comments, and I'd like to close out by saying that I am one of our historians, and he said that a peoples who have lost their history is like a tree that has no roots, and I am quoting Marcus Garvey. Brothers and sisters, until the next time, we invite you to tell others. What other broadcast, as far as African Americans sharing communications with each other, what other broadcast or what other communications can you get as to where we can jointly hold the conversations about the problems that we're having in our communities? But if we all continue to grow and come together collectively, that's how we're going to be able to solve our problems. That's how we're going to be able to go back to the way we live during the time of segregation, where we had all of our mines in our communities, large mines, small mines, medium-sized mines, but all together, collective minds sharing of problems and ideas and intellectual ideas with each other. So again, join the New Africa. Join our discussions on Wednesdays. Pass the word on, because what will happen? We've been on this show now for 8 years, paying for it out of our own pockets. But again, so again, you owe it to yourself. You owe it to your families. You owe it to your kids. And you need to bring on the young folks. We are going to have to solve our problems ourselves, because, again, the hate in this country, there is no other avenue. We have to save ourselves, and we have to save our children. So with that said, good evening.
country loves. Something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did.